We're glad that you are here this morning. As Jerry's already mentioned, we do have those who are visiting with us, and we're glad that you're present. We appreciate that very much. We encourage you to come back whenever you may have the opportunity. I think it is in order to say a special welcome to the Presnells this morning as they have placed their membership with us, and we look forward to working with them and appreciate very much the confidence that they have expressed in us to want to be a part of the group that is here. That's encouraging to us, and we hope that in turn we can provide encouragement back to them. There are two things that I find comforting this morning. One, I've got the same podium, and more importantly, I've got the same audience, and everything else may be changing rapidly, but those two things stay the same. I want you to turn with me, if you would, to 1 Corinthians chapter 10. I want us to look this morning at the first 13 verses of this chapter, and I think we can draw some conclusions from this that will help us as we think about our own relationship with God. What Paul is doing as he writes to the church at Corinth is he is laying out for them and using for them Israel as an example to them. And he's pointing out some of the problems that Israel ran into as they came out of Egypt and then they crossed through the Red Sea and then begin their journey as they head for the land of promise. And it's interesting as we look at this, there are some things that are established. One, it's established that Israel is in a relationship with God. But then the next thing that is established is there were some problems in that and the way that they handled that relationship and in the things that they did. And we see some of the results of that, and then the application is made to us. And that's the outline that I want us to follow this morning. I didn't know we were going to be here. I had an overhead ready, and I didn't bring it because John told me he moved the screen, and I didn't know that I would have a screen. I wish I had thought about that to go ahead and bring it. But anyway, hopefully you can follow along as we outline this passage this morning. I want you to begin with me in verse 1, and we'll read verses 1 through 4. And what we see established as we read this is that Israel was in a relationship with God. I don't think anybody would question that. Listen to this. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, beginning in verse 1. Paul to Corinth says, "Moreover, brethren, I do not want you to be unaware that all our fathers were under the cloud and all passed through the sea. All were baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea. All ate the same spiritual food and all drank the same spiritual drink. For they drank of that spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ." And so we see, here is Israel, and they're in a relationship with God. They're brought out of the land of Egypt, and what happened? If you remember back, as we studied this not that long ago, what took place as they came out is they were guided by a cloud. And in the daytime, they would follow that cloud, and that cloud would provide them with light at night, and that was the way God led them as they came out of Egypt. They came, and you remember the Egyptian armies are following, and they come to the Red Sea. And that cloud, as it were, protected them from the Egyptian army as they find themselves with their backs against the Red Sea. And then we see that as Moses goes and he comes to the Red Sea and he extends his rod out over it and the sea parts and Israel walks through on dry ground, just an awesome story that takes place as Israel, in their relationship with God, leave the land of Egypt headed for the Promised Land. They come out of that, and as it points out, they were baptized into Moses. In a sense, as they came through that Red Sea, they're no longer under the bondage of Egypt. Now they are under the leadership of Moses as they're about to go through the wilderness on their way to the Promised Land. They ate of the same spiritual food, the miraculously provided manna. They drank the same spiritual drink. And you think about the water that came out of the rock and the miraculous way in which God took care of his people. You think about as the point is made that what they partook of was the spiritual rock, the rock of Jesus Christ. Who would question that Israel was in a relationship with God? And as we think about that, I think we see that that is an important point for us to come to understand. As we continue on, though, and we look at verse 5, we see that God was not pleased, though, with the actions of Israel. Look at verse 5 with me, if you would, of 1 Corinthians 10. We have seen these things that they, in their relationship with God, but then in verse 5 it says, "But with most of them, God was not well pleased, for their bodies were scattered in the wilderness." And so we see Israel. They come out of Egypt, they're in a relationship with God. God is providing for them not only protection, but he's providing for them food, he's providing for them water. They're partaking of that spiritual rock of Jesus Christ. And here they come out of Egypt, but then we see as they begin to wander into the wilderness and begin that journey toward the Promised Land, we see that God was not well pleased with them, and many of them found themselves dead in the wilderness, punished by God as a result of the things that they had done in disobedience to him. And I think that's an important thing for us to understand as well.
as a result of their disobedience, God destroyed many of them. I think it's important to understand he didn't destroy all of them. He destroyed the ones who disobeyed. And so the question comes up, what happened? Why is it that here we see a group of people who were in a relationship with God? They find themselves being cared for by God, given all the things that they could possibly need as they begin this journey through the wilderness, and yet, as they go through, somehow they find themselves violating that relationship and God punishing them as a result. As we continue on, we see what happened. If you'll pick up with me in verse 6, the first thing that is pointed out is that they lusted after evil things. In verse 6 it says, "Now these things became our examples, to the intent that we should not lust after evil things as they also lusted." I want you to somehow find a way to mark your place there in 1 Corinthians chapter 10. And then I want you to turn with me to the book of Numbers. Go with me to chapter 11, because we see in Numbers 11, and you'll need to mark your place in Numbers too, because we're going to be flipping back and forth here for the next few minutes. But in Numbers chapter 11, we see one of these instances where this took place. The people begin to complain because they don't have meat. And oh, if we were just back in Egypt, oh, the great things we had in Egypt. It was just the most wonderful place you can possibly imagine. The food was great. We had all of these delicacies and everything was so great. Why couldn't we be back in Egypt? Now we're eating this manna and drinking this water. This is just awful. And the people complain. And God answers them. And if you will, look with me in Numbers chapter 11 and read with me verse 4. It says, "Now the mixed multitude who were among them yielded to the intense craving. So the children of Israel also wept again and said, 'Who will give us meat to eat?'" As we go down through the rest of this chapter, we see God provided meat for them in the form of quail. And we see that he laid these quail out before them. And what Israel did with that is they just basically turned into a bunch of gluttons and ate to a point that God was totally discouraged and displeased with what they had done. I want you to read with me, if you would, beginning in verse 33, and we'll read verses 33 and 34. Israel partakes of this meat, does so in an inappropriate manner. Just a disgusting scene pictured before this. And as we look at verse 33, it says, "But while the meat was still between their teeth, before it was chewed, the wrath of the Lord was aroused against the people, and the Lord struck the people with a very great plague. So he called the name of that place Kibroth Hattaavah, because there they buried the people who had yielded to craving." What had happened? They remembered the things of Egypt, and they desired those things so much, and they call out to God. God provides for them, and instead of in a moderate way partaking of the blessings with which God had given them, Israel just turned into a bunch of gluttons, lusting after the meat that God had provided. And it says, while the meat was still between their teeth, before it was chewed, God sends a plague and wipes out, and in this case, the number is not given. There's a large number of the nation of Israel as a result of their lusting after evil things. Turn back with me again to the book of 1 Corinthians. If you'll continue with me in verse 6, we see the second thing that happened to them. The first thing was this lusting after evil things. But as we look at verse 7, another thing is brought up. Paul continues, and he says, "And do not become idolaters as some of them were. As it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play." This time I need you to turn with me to the book of Exodus. The reference that is being made here is back to just very soon after they came out of the land of Egypt and had crossed through the Red Sea. And Moses has gone up onto Mount Sinai to get the law of Moses from God, as God is going to reveal that to him. And Israel is now down in the valley around the mountain. They're at the foot of the mountain. And Joshua is there, and they begin to plead with him to say, "You know, we don't really know what's happened to Moses, and what we need is something, you know, so that we can worship and know what the God is that brought us out of Israel," or out of Egypt, I'm sorry. And Joshua gives them some instruction. And then in verse 4 beginning of Exodus chapter 32, we see what he did. I said Joshua. I should have said Aaron. I apologize for that. Aaron is the one. In Exodus chapter 32, beginning in verse 4, it says, "And he received the gold from their hand, and he fashioned it with an engraving tool, and made a molded calf. Then they said, 'This is your God, O Israel, that brought you out of the land of Egypt.' So when Aaron saw it, he built an altar before it, and Aaron made a proclamation and said, 'Tomorrow is a feast to the Lord.' Then they rose early on the next day, offered burnt offerings and brought peace offerings, and the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play." We see what took place. They come out of the land of Egypt. God has brought them through the Red Sea on dry land. He's provided food for them. He's provided drink for them. He's giving them the things that they need. They're in a relationship with Him. But God is displeased, and one of the reasons He was displeased is because of the idolatry that they failed to leave behind in the land of Egypt. They allowed themselves to continue to engage in these things, and even in such a short period of time after they had left, we see them, having seen the power of God, bowing down and worshiping an idol. They sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play, is the condemnation. And if we were to continue to read in this section of the history of the children of Israel, we would see what happens to them. God punishes them severely as a result of the things that they had done. Turn back with me again to 1 Corinthians chapter 10. The next thing that is listed off, in verse 6 he talks about lusting after evil things. In verse 7 he talks about idolatry. In verse 8, listen to what he says. 1 Corinthians 10 verse 8. Nor let us commit sexual immorality as some of them did. And in one day 23,000 fell. The reference that is being pointed to here is back in Numbers chapter 25. In Numbers chapter 25, we see again as they committed fornication with the women of Moab and are engaged in idolatry, and involved in that is this harlotry and the fornication that is being referenced here in 1 Corinthians 10. If you will, look with me, beginning in verse 1 of Numbers 25. It says, "Now Israel remained in Acacia Grove, and the people began to commit harlotry with the women of Moab. They invited the people to the sacrifices of their gods, and the people ate and bowed down to their gods. So Israel was joined to Baal of Peor, and the anger of the Lord was aroused against Israel." What happened? They began to lust after evil things. They found themselves engaged in idolatry, as we look at that golden calf. They found themselves committing fornication with the women of Moab as they were engaged in these idol-worshipping practices. What had happened to Israel? They had that relationship with God, but as a result of their disobedience, we see them destroyed. In this case, 23,000 dying in one day. What did he say? Many fell in the wilderness. Turn back to 1 Corinthians chapter 10. There are a couple more that are listed here. As we look at verse 9, he points out the fact, he says, "Nor let us tempt Christ, as some of them also tempted, and were destroyed by serpents." The idea here, tempting Christ, other versions would say tempting the Lord. The idea is that here is Israel, and they come out of the land of Egypt, and God is providing for them, but every step of the way, they complained and they fussed. They didn't like the food. They didn't like the situation. They didn't like the way God was dealing with it. They didn't like this and they didn't like that. And over again, they're testing God. They're testing Him. They're placing blame upon Him for the things that are taking place. And we see what a tremendous disadvantage that brought to the people of Israel. The reference here is back to Numbers chapter 21. In Numbers chapter 21, again we see as Israel violates the things that God had provided for them, and we see the punishment that God rendered. If you will, beginning in verse 4. And listen to the things that they're saying. Here God has provided for them, and they're complaining about it. In verse 4 of Numbers 21, "Then they journeyed from Mount Hor by the way of the Red Sea to go around the land of Edom, and the soul of the people became very discouraged on the way. And the people spoke against God and against Moses, 'Why have you brought us up out of Egypt to die in the wilderness? For there's no food and no water, and our soul loathes this worthless bread.' So the Lord sent fiery serpents among the people, and they bit the people, and many of the people of Israel died. Therefore the people came to Moses and said, 'We have sinned, for we have spoken against the Lord and against you. Pray to the Lord that He may take away the serpents from us.' So Moses prayed for the people. Then the Lord said to Moses, 'Make a fiery serpent and set it on a pole, and it shall be that everyone who is bitten, when he looks at it, shall live.' So Moses made a bronze serpent and put it on a pole, and so it was. If a serpent had bitten anyone, when he looked at the bronze serpent, he lived." Can you imagine coming to a point where you have been blessed by God more than you can imagine, and yet even as you look at the very blessings that you have, you say, "We loathe it. We loathe this worthless bread. We don't want this stuff anymore. Why can't we go? You brought us out here to die in the wilderness. Why can't we just die in Egypt? Look at the things we had there." Can you imagine? If we go back to 1 Corinthians 10, the final thing that is listed for us, as Paul uses them as an example, is found here as we look at the fact that they complained or they murmured. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 10, Paul says, "Nor complain, as some of them also complained, and were destroyed
by the destroyer. The reference here is back to Numbers chapter 16. I'm not going to turn there, but it's Korah and Abiram. And they rise up against Moses. And they murmur about the leadership of Moses and the things that Moses has done. And they moan and complain, and Korah and Abiram lead a rebellion against Moses. And we see as God deals with them and He destroys them as a result of their complaining against Moses and murmuring about him. What have we seen? Number one, they lusted after evil things. Number two, they found themselves engaged in idolatry. Number three, they found themselves committing fornication with the women of Moab. The fourth thing we see is that they tempted the Lord. The fifth thing that we see is the idea that they murmured or they complained about the things that God had done for them and the leadership of the one whom God had provided to lead them through this time in their history. That's what they did. And we look and we can see countless thousands that died as a result of their disobedience to God. Here's Israel. They're in a relationship with God. God is providing for them, and yet He is not pleased with them. And we see them being punished as a result of their disobedience. Now, here's the question. What's the application? What is the application? I don't think I need to stand before you and spend a lot of time on this, because as we look at what Paul says, he wraps this thing up for them. I want you to read with me verses 11 and 12. The application for us is these things are examples for us. Listen to what he says. He says, "Now all these things happened to them as examples, and they were written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the ages have come. Therefore let him who thinks he stands take heed, lest he fall." What I wonder is if when Israel started complaining about the leadership of Moses, and they started fussing about the man, or they found themselves as they are about to engage in the fornicating practices with the harlots of Moab, what do you think they were thinking? You wonder if they're not thinking, we've got this relationship with God. They knew they had God on their side. And yet in spite of that relationship, they were willing to violate that relationship and break that covenant that they had made with Him and go against the one whom God had appointed as their leader. Can you imagine? After they walked through the Red Sea on dry ground, after they would wake up in the morning and there's the manna, and they would see the water coming from a rock, seeing the power of God as He dealt with them, and then turn against Him. These things are an example to us. I think it's very easy for us at times to become, maybe this isn't the best word, but almost arrogant in our relationship with God. We look at ourselves and we say, we're in a relationship with God. God has blessed us richly and He's given us all of these different things. But are there things that we're allowing in, like the Israelites did, that are causing us to be in violation of the covenant that we have made with Him, just as Israel did? And as we look at this relationship, is it possible for us to come to a point where our head is held a little bit high and our chest sticks out just a little bit more as we're pretty proud of the fact that we are God's people? But then as we really look at our lives and examine what He would have us to do, as Israel received His instruction, so have we. Is it easy for us to come to a point where we're violating the things that God would have us to do? There is no doubt that temptation will come. There is no doubt that opportunities to disobey will be presented to each one of us. But we must be aware. We must be aware that those things will come. We must realize that those dangers are laid before us. But there is a word of confidence to us and comfort to us as we look at verse 13. As Paul concludes this section, he says, "No temptation has overtaken you except such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with the temptation will also make the way of escape that you may be able to bear it." Israel did not have to give in to the things that they did. God had allowed them to see His power. He was providing for them. They didn't have to do that. And as we look at ourselves and we think about those times when temptation is presented to us, we don't have to give in either. We can resist. We can stand there and say, "I'm not going to do that, because that's not what God would have me to do. And I will not do anything that would violate my relationship with God." They're a warning to us.
They're an example to us. May we heed the example. I wonder if God were to look down on His people today and were to think about the things and just recount in His mind, and He would know every one. Recount in His mind the blessings that He has provided to us, the things that He has done for us that have been just beyond our ability to understand. And we look at the fact, and He looks at the fact that we're in a relationship with Him. I wonder if He were to begin to list the things, as He did through Paul, if He were to begin to list the things that are keeping us from being what He would have us to be. If He were to begin to list the things that He finds displeasing about the things that we do, how many of those same things would be on the list? Lusting after evil things? You think there's any possibility that we find ourselves doing that? I would say beyond a shadow of a doubt. Idolatry? Now, nobody here has a golden calf. Nobody here is bringing their gold and their jewels to be formed into a molded calf so that we can look and say, this is the God that has given us all of the things that we have. Not a single person here would do that. When we look at the things that we have, we look at our jobs, we look at the things of life that have been presented to us on a silver platter, as it were, and I think it's very easy for us to allow those things to elevate to a point where they are just as idolatrous as the golden calf that they bowed down to at the foot of Mount Sinai. Fornication? Is it a problem among Christians? You better believe it. We look around and you hear about young people who find themselves, for whatever reason, engaged in that type of a practice. And a girl comes and talks to her parents and says, I'm pregnant. Is that kind of thing going on? Yes. And it's not just going on in the world around us, though it is definitely there. It's going among the people of God. And we're seeing churches destroyed over it. And we're seeing homes destroyed over it. And we're seeing relationships just devastated as a result of this type of activity. Would that be one of the things that would be on God's list as He looks at us? Do we tempt Christ? Do we tempt the Lord? Have you ever complained? Have you ever found yourself in a position where something is happening to you and you just can't quite figure out what it is, and one of your first reactions is to say, I just don't understand why God would do this to me. I don't understand why God would let this happen. Why in the world has God come to a point where He's doing these type of things to me? I just don't understand that. Is that any different than Israel looking at themselves with the things that they had as they're moving through the wilderness and saying, oh, to be back in Egypt, in the slavery, in the making of bricks by hand? But all they can think about is the good things, and the leek, and the garlic, and all the wonderful food that they had to eat as they were back in the land of Egypt, and they fail to see the blessings that God has provided for them as He's brought them out of that bondage and given them freedom and leading them to a land of promise. Can you see the relationship in what we have? God, through the sacrifice of His only Son, has pulled us from a situation of being enslaved in sin to a point that we can be free from the bondage of sin. We can be His children. We can be in a relationship with Him. What more could we want? And to think that we might possibly complain about something we have to face in this life because we're a Christian? Because we're on our way to the promised land? Can you imagine? What about this idea of complaining or murmuring? You think that might be on God's list if He were to look down at us? I hope not. But I'm afraid it might be. Do you see how we can look at that nation as Paul has done for us in 1 Corinthians chapter 10? They were in a relationship with God, but even as they were in that relationship, God was displeased. And He destroyed many of them before they came to the land of promise. Guess where we're going? We, as we sit here this morning, are on our way to the land of promise. They in a physical sense. We in a spiritual sense.
you're on that path right now. Don't allow these things that Paul continued to see as problems with the people of God and their relationship with him. Don't allow those things to draw you off track.
I want to read for you just a couple of things here. As I see as similarities, Israel was in a relationship with God. So are we. Israel was headed for the promised land. So are we. Israel had God providing for them every step of the way. So do we. Israel rebelled and fell short of the goal. At least most of them did. And the answer on that one has yet to be seen. But is there anyone who would not say, so can we? We can make the same mistake. We can find ourselves falling short. We can find ourselves on the way to a land of promise. And because of the few short years that we live here and the actions that we take as we are here, failing to enter in. So the question that comes to each of us as we sit here this morning, as we think about what God has done for us, the question that comes to us is, what am I doing to make sure that I successfully complete the journey and end up gathered around the throne of God in the land of promise for all eternity? The hurdles of this life accomplished, the pitfalls that we have listed this morning behind us, what am I going to have to do? You're going to have to dedicate yourself completely to God. That begins by becoming a Christian, by repenting of your sins, confessing your faith in Jesus as the Son of God, being baptized for those sins to be washed away, rising up that new creature, one who has now entered into that covenant with God, in the relationship with God. That's how it starts. And then as we proceed through life, we put behind us those things that would distract us. We keep those from being things that would keep us from doing what we need to do. And we journey through this life much as Israel journeyed through the wilderness on their way to Canaan. We journey through the wilderness of this life on our way to eternal life around the throne of God. Don't miss that opportunity. Don't let something get in your way, but rather do what you need to do to make a successful journey. If you need to come to Jesus Christ, we hope you'll do it. And we hope you'll do it this morning as we stand and as we sing.